I'm Wilma Fingerdo, and I have a sausage on a stick. Well, technically the sausage is inside a small child, and I'm beating him with the stick, but the little tow rag shouldn't have stolen my hot dog.
I'm Mia Harkness, and I've been sent in to check there are no small animals hibernating inside the bonfire, because I'm the only one who'll fit.
I'm Juan Kerr, and I've lit the blue touch paper before retiring to a safe distance. I've retired to West Britain, just to be on the safe side.
I'm Norma Snuckers, and I've got a little sparkler. Oh, I could set the curtains on fire.
Wow, that's really burning. Let's do the headlines before a fire warden chases us all out into the Apex Park.
Roxy raging as Nocti looks okay.
It's a good thing that Hardy is the fastest commander in the galaxy.
67, dude.
Rabid ramblings from a dew-dropping gunguzzler.
Sal starts her new career in avian husbandry.
Welcome to week 436 of the BGS.
First this evening, we've received news from Major General Noctivagus that he's been involved in an incident. When we say involved, we mean witness to. And by witness to, we mean watched through his fingers whilst terror and horror unfolded. Major General Noctivagus, retired BDS hero and celebrated Huttoneer, is known to act in his retirement as a liaison officer between Hutton and other squadrons. Last week, he was on secondment to Squadron Hide in Plain Sight, a group of ninja commanders who excel at blending into the background and under the command of one rogue Roxy, combat ninja and all-round good egg. They have been on a number of far-flung missions throughout the galaxy, testing exobiology, upgrades to their ship systems in recent months, and training AI companions Eli, Callisto and Astra to tell the difference between a Fonticulus and a Cactoida Pultanta, also known as the Knobbly Space Loofer, when they came across a random, apparently abandoned agridome with attached drinking establishment. The kind of place back in the Old West, where you tie a horse up outside, push through the swing doors and see swarthy types playing cards, punching each other and occasionally bashing a chair over someone's head. But it was abandoned. Not a soul in sight. The sign by the Undertaker was swinging in a non-existent breeze. Well, it was a tenuous atmosphere. And if their helmet audioscape started playing the noises of an Ennio Morricone classic western, it would have. The bioscanners were, however, picking up life forms in the nearby agridome, which appeared to still have power. So, being a long way from the bubble and the curious types that they are, they went to investigate. Glancing at the dome, it was attached at one side to a biological research station, but there was no sign of life. And breaching the airlock carefully by pushing the open the door button, no point breaking out the cutting tools if not necessary, they made their way inside. On lifting their visors, the stink was heavy. Something lived here. Something that had spent a good deal of time munching its way through the plants and leaving sizable deposits around the place. Glancing at these mighty mounds, it was clear that whoever lived here had brought a mammal with them of large size. Unshipping their weaponry and calling out, "Is there anyone there?" they made their way through the agridome, and at the sight of a wrecked door through to the medical facility, gulped a little, fired up the head torches and switched to the heavy weaponry. The sight that greeted them on entering the medical facility was unnerving. Over in one corner, all they could see, reflected in the light, were two beady eyes. Two beady eyes at head level. Then there was the angry snorting noise. Whatever it was had been helping itself to the medicine cabinets. The performance enhancers were all chewed up. The steroids and special jars of medicinal onion head were empty. The stimulants and combat enhancers were mostly definitely scoffed. There were bodies, or the remains of bodies, scattered throughout the room. Sort of stepped on, punctured, squished kind of bodies. And then there was more snorting, and the beady eyes narrowed a little. It was at this point that the Major General covered his eyes, mainly as Roxy had turned her head torch while facing him. All he saw were blue dots. The noises that happened after will probably live with him for the rest of his life. Grunting, screaming, death-curdling war cries, the sounds of leaping, all that from Roxy. Howard leaped onto one of the tables, which had promptly collapsed. She had attempted to wrangle a rather randy roid-rage space rhino and gone for the high ground. The rhino, as they do, had charged and not stopping for the table, the wall, the medical cabinet, had ploughed right on through. With enough presence of mind, Roxy had taken a tumble, whipped out her trusty rocket launcher and fired at the passing horny beast. Wild with all the chemicals it had consumed and furious it was locked indoors with nothing more to eat. As luck would have it, the rhino only mildly trampled Roxy, but her shot, well, it is passing creature, or we should say the past creature, right in the posterior. Its eyes were wide. The rocket vanished. There was a noise and the rampant raging monster was turned into more than a few very large, medium rare steaks. Nocti, glancing in horror at the scene, applied a number of medipacks to poor Roxy, who was actually quite chuffed at the accuracy of her shot. As if it hadn't just hit the rhino, just there would have probably have perforated the walls of the building. Unfortunately, it turns out that poor Roxy managed to shatter just about everything in the trampling and is seriously considered renaming her ship the Rapid Unscheduled Disassembly. Nothing a decent set of skeletal cyborg enhancements, a good set of painkillers and a few months of physio can't cure. Roxy maintains it had nothing to do with falling off the table and everything to do with the 2-ton stumpy roid rage rhino and 4 stumpy feet. Noxy can't comment as he is still seeing blue dots. We wish Roxy well and have suggested that the Major General take 2 pills from Nurse Wyeth and call her in the morning if he's still having nightmares about those rhino steaks.
Martin's annual trip to North but not as North as Northern last week was our usual refined evening affair filled with craft beers, belly rubs for Alvin, a few accidental ship-to-scenery docking incidents and of course the obligatory muchas muchas carne that accompanies these things. It was the first time that Commander Hardy, the fastest pilot in the galaxy, well, the fastest at the Hutton run at least, had joined the Hutton crew and in celebration joined a number of the team for what's colloquially what's generally known as a swift half or 3 at a local watering hole after the main festivities, joining Cecil, there's a lot of joining going on, joining Cecil, who was on one of his gin benders, the kind where he uses gin as a mixer for his gin, then ditches the straw in preference for just quaffing the whole glass. Commander Hardy was thoroughly inducted into the Hutton way of doing an evening out. Their choice of Harrogate Zoo and Menagerie for their evening drinks may not have been the best choice though, as at some point, purely coincidentally given the wild animal story from our first article, they took a wrong turning, and instead of going into the bar alongside the wildcat pens, they went to the wrong side of the glass. It was at this point that one of the zoo's cougars decided that Cecil was just the kind of tasty morsel they'd been looking for. Not known for their eyesight or common sense, this breed. And made a beeline for the gin-soaked sot in the hopes of devouring him. Commander Hardy, however, with the kind of aplomb that one needs to be able to hold the Hutton record for a number of years, had his running shoes on. Seeing the approaching beast, he chucked Cecil over one shoulder and showed the local wildlife a clean pair of heels, and, dropping some of his patented Elite Dangerous Baking Club special chocolate brownies in his wake to distract the approaching cougar. Slamming the door shut and breathing a sigh of relief, the two of them left the enclosure far behind, neglecting to save one of the poor locals, who was swiftly dragged back to her den and, presumably, devoured with extreme prejudice. Well, thanks to the Hutton North Britain, but not as north as really North Britain, commanders for their company, and for Commander Hardy for his swift actions in saving Cecil from a fate worse than death.
Week 67 of Too Hot Too Messy saw commanders passing the 106,000 delivery mark. Numbers are still good with a bumper week of over 1,700, and the four-week average is now at a healthy 1,500 per week. The recent expansion started on Sunday and should come to an end in the next 24 hours, so head over to Alpha Centauri to take advantage of bumper Centauri Megagin production. One of the joys of Too Hot, Too Messy is visiting the huge variety of planets in the bubble. And let's face it, most of the markets we're delivering to, and all of the new Odyssey settlements, are on a planetary surface. Long gone are the days of universal beige and grey, now we have variation beyond measure. Colours, textures, exobiology, and geological features. And that's without mentioning the atmospheres, blues, reds, and greens. On approach, I often find myself thinking, wow, that's a real potato. Lovely, the settlements will be all nice and close together and almost no gravity. Or you end up with a monster planet where it's, whoa, big fella, whoa, on the way in, and your jetpack feels like it's just run out of oomph. Plenty of parking spaces at Hutton this week with green lights all the way in. That Braintree Arboretum on Pad 2 is looking like a distinct possibility. Hutton runs this week, we had Steve King, who was 2 minutes 13 seconds off Commander Hardy's pace. I think I spot an interdiction in there somewhere. And Asivor Dog, 4 minutes 20 seconds behind the record.
This week, we found one of Volcaris's messages in the comms inbox. How it got past the spam filter is a mystery, but since it's here, we'll read it out. Although I must warn you that from my initial read-through, you may be experiencing some kind of delusional episode or has begun experimenting with ways to get an Echo Dot to interpret Morris dancing and transcribe the results to an email. With limited success. Anyway, message begins. Just following up a bit with something more banterish than newish, while we were laying out the two-week plan at Taranis, Frontier was busy upcycling all the wrecked spires to make the others stronger. This gave us a wonky start last week, and in response, we've had to trim the Taranis border a little and extend the plan a week. Everyone's still adjusting to the new pace, and huge thanks to the many more squadrons who are helping now. Anyone else who can do spire kills or Titan pods as needed at Taranis this week has a head start, then a big push next week will end it. The 1 year mark is soon, end of the month, and it'll make for great news if a Titan gets violently downcycled before that. On the side, I got something for Amelia. Alexandra dropped a video of a full Titan mining run in the war thread. Take a look at, and there's a link which we'll post in the chat. It's 34 minutes from reaching the maelstrom to docking with a full hold, no edits. You can skip most of the actual mining once you get the idea. It just shows what we're trying to get people to do. If it's motivating, then that's great. If it's terrifying, then at least it saves making a Titan mining ship. But then Amelia wouldn't be the best miner in the galaxy. If the credits matter, it's about the same as low temperature diamonds, and the Titan gets lasered in the face. Technically correct. It's just a really big face. Video is already public, i.e. fine if you want to broadcast any all of it, just as well since we've done that. I'm mostly just sending it here to pass on to Hutton's mining department. Commander Volcarius, message ends.
Sal, pilot of the PWAF and adored favourite of Alvin, and many others, released a little news last week. She was hanging up her remlock. Parking the PWAF. Piloting no more. This has caused more than a little sadness across the galaxy, as Sally's patch notes every release day rival our own for their little snips of humour. The hints and tips for surviving patch day, and of course her tireless attention to detail that means every commander exits patch day in a happier state than when they entered it, even if their ship is on fire. Their elite NPC left unable to hit a barn from the inside with a beam laser. Their SRV stuck upside down on a pink planet somewhere after a wheels to geyser incident. Hutton's roving reporting team did reach out to Sal as to what her new venture might be and had some surprising news. She's taken up avian husbandry, finding a perfectly pink planet with just the right climate and a mountain that looks surprisingly just like Mount Fuji. She's opened a chocobo farm. For those wondering what on Earth, or anywhere else in the galaxy, a chocobo is, well, you're not alone. They don't exist. Well, they do, but only in digital form. They're a bird. A big bird. A big, colourful bird. And you can ride them. And you can also cook and eat them. They fly, only a little bit. Imagine an ostrich had extra marital relations with a peacock and evolved somehow into some Pokemon-like paint shop explosion of feathers and colour. Anyway, Sal likes them, especially the pink ones, and she's parked the PWAF on a small planet, set it up with an awning and a science lab, and decided she's gonna do some bioengineering. She's gonna bioengineer herself a real-life chocobo. A smattering of ostrich DNA, a little bit of bird of paradise, a smidge of flamingo, and a hearty dose of peacock. That and a hearty dose of the island of Dr. Moreau, gene splicing and mad scientist. I mean, she's getting there. And if they get unruly, she's got a really big sword and a big oven. Anyway, we wish her well. Sally, it's been a joy. Don't be a stranger to Hutton. If you ever get a week off riding across pink landscapes from your kaleidoscopic chocobo, then do feel free to drop by for a glass of something and a chinwag. We'll miss you. But wholly support your decision to pursue your final fantasy out there in the galaxy. Press the wrong button there.
Seamless.
Yeah, completely seamless. Absolute massive seam there. Press the wrong button. I apologise. Continue.
So you're not going to bong me in?
Yep, here you go.
Things could be described as peachy in Hutton Space this week, with 6 systems on Alvin's report and 1 needing chuckly assistance. More on those stories coming up. 6 hours ago, the wooden spoon was firmly in the grip of Hilpar's Psi on a lowly 28. But since then, with 1 twang of the BGS knicker elastic, the system jumped by 6 points, handing the baton of banality to Barnard Star, floundering on 32. Both systems of elections tying up a quarter of their influence. Stein 2051 dropped 3 points in the week to a lowly 35, and squabbling amongst 4 factions leaves only 6% of influence on the table. Ross 671 unexpectedly relinquished its grip on the wooden spoon, moving up 11 points in the week to 36, putting 20 points of daylight between Hutton and second place. Hard to move Epsilon India is on 37. It looks like Montgomery Python has almost single-handedly boosted 36 off Yuki by 10 points to end the week on 39. We have an outbreak of space lurgy in Narensi, so shift medicines into the large pads at Yang Orbital. Approach over the ring planet, but look out for the noob habbers on the final approach. We didn't manage we didn't manage to be hopeless enough to retreat from LHS 3531, but we're giving it another go in Lord 26. At the overachieving end of the Hutton Systems table, we have just three of our systems above 60%, but one of them is on 84. Really, folks, come on, let's calm things down. We should reveal our latest new dump very soon. Priorities this week are, if you want to truck something, relieve the outbreak. In Narensis, now let's have what we just had.